Issues with Georgie Frost, making the pound in your pocket go that little bit further.
A very, very good morning to you if you've just joined us. Welcome back if you've been listening. I'm joined in the studio with Ed Monk, the personal finance editor from This Is Money. If you don't know what it is, go online. It's brilliant. It's the award-winning financial website and money section of the Mail Online. On behalf of us, they investigate all sorts of issues from phone scams through to how to keep your household bills down and the best money-saving tips. Energy is a good one. We'll be talking about that shortly. And solar panels as well. So now this could be the year that we don't see the traditional autumn-winter price hike, so is it still worth switching? We're talking, of course, about energy bills. Why switch? Who should do it? What can you save? And what do you do if it all goes wrong? Well, earlier this week, I touched on this subject with Will Hodgson from The Big Deal. It's an energy switching website that he is a co-founder of.
Collective switching is like switching, except it brings together thousands of consumers to negotiate as one, so you can create a better deal with more bargaining power than anyone could individually. You get involved by going to the website, which is thisisthebigdeal.com. You sign up, and we've taken every single care we can to make sure it's as simple as possible. Once you've signed up, all you need to do is sit back and relax until we bring you the deal. We are negotiating constantly with energy companies to create deals that are better than what's available elsewhere. There's been an era of price comparison website dominance, but now increasingly it looks as though the cheapest tariffs are available with collective switches. It varies according to which region you're in, according to what your usage is, and we would absolutely recommend that people use our site to get a comparison. You'll see exactly how much you save before you take the deal, but it's in the region of £250, depending on how big your home is, where you are, what your usage is, etc. I think the concept's quite simple. Everyone knows if you join a big group, you might get a big discount, and that's exactly how it's worked with collective switches in the UK. However, until recently, a lot of collective switches have failed to create the best deal in the market. That's what we put right, and what I'd emphasize to anyone looking for a better energy deal out there: you are not obliged to take our deal. It takes moments to sign up. If we get you something which is the best out there, you can take it. If not, just go back to price comparison websites.
That's Will Hodgson from The Big Deal, the energy switching website. Over the past years, energy bills have tended to rise, but this year they're expected to fall. Ed, why is that? And we'll go back to the energy switching in a little bit, but why is that, and will they?
Well, I don't know if they will or not. Everybody hopes that they will.
Crystal ball time.
Yeah, the reason people are hopeful is that wholesale energy prices have fallen this year. Last month, I think the figure was 22% down this year. Now, if you talk to energy suppliers, they'll explain that it's all very complicated, and it's simply not the case that if wholesale prices fall, their own prices can fall, because wholesale prices make up an increasingly small a proportion of your bill, and they buy energy in advance and all the rest of it. But there is maybe a case. And actually, if you look at the deals that are out there, the very best ones, if you're prepared to go and look for a deal, they are falling. So people are hopeful, but it's really important that people go and look for those deals, because if you're on a standard tariff, as they're called, if you've never switched, you're really not going to benefit from these price falls.
Why do you think people don't switch?
I think it's just not on their minds. It's kind of boring, really, and their gas bill and their electricity bill. And it's not like going to Tesco, where you see the price of everything and you can get excited about what you're buying and the price you're paying. It's just a utility that you have to hand over. It's often, frankly, you're not in touch with it in the same way. It will just leave your bank account via a direct debit, and so it's possible not to really feel the price of your energy. But of course, every now and again you're going to have to settle the bill, and that's when you feel it.
I suppose it's made simpler if we're using the Tesco analogy by comparison websites like Compare the Market, Go Compare, Uswitch, Money Supermarket, and Confused.com. Mm. But still, there is confusion about this. And we were hearing from Will Hodgson from The Big Deal. He's not a big fan of comparison websites because of the way that they're supposedly hoodwinking consumers into getting not the best tariff, but the one that gives them the biggest kickback. What do you think of that?
Well, comparison websites, in principle, are a very good thing. Mm. There's, for a long time, actually, it's not a new criticism of comparison websites to say that they have gentle ways of pushing certain products at their users. A little bit of guidance for consumers, and actually all those major comparison websites that you talk, it's perfectly possible to get the very best price on them. Mm. But I suppose it's valid in one sense to argue that they perhaps will dress up some products ahead of others.
Mark?
I mean, a lot of them will come up with offers like cashback, or there'll be added bells and whistles. Like they'll be saying, oh, we're giving you more renewable energy, or they'll lock you in for a certain period, or have exit charges, which are often hidden and harder to work out. So I think the key is to not just look at the headline figure and kind of look beneath the bonnet.
Very good advice. What do you think of collective deals on bills and organisations such as The Big Deal then?
Well, I think the logic is very strong for exactly the reasons that Will said. You know, you buy collectively, you should be able to bargain a better price. Will's isn't the only collective scheme out there. Another one reported this week that again managed to get a price that was below the standard market rate. And that's important. That's an important sort of evolution for this as a model, really. Mm. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes in the future. You need the scale. You need enough people to sign up so that you can make those bargains.
I think the big complaint with that, with The Big Deal, was they may have this week found one of the cheaper deals, or the cheapest deal out there. However, it was with a company that perhaps wasn't doing so well in terms of customer relations.
Exactly right. And you, what happens is you take this big sort of rump of people looking for a better deal, and you put it out to tender, and it's going to be whoever can offer the best price. Now, without singling any one collective scheme out, are those schemes looking for the service that they're going to give their users? Are they looking for those sorts of things? I mean, let's face it, all energy suppliers have had issues with billing and customer service. So there's no guarantee if you go for a big one, you're going to get a better service. But it may well be that if you go with a big one, you have those routes to put things right. You know, we deal with readers all the time that are in disputes with their energy supplier, where bills have been set too low, direct debits have been set too low or too high. And putting those right is a real headache. And if that, you know, if you've gone for a supplier that might be £20 cheaper, is that £20 worth it if you have months and months of headaches to sort out your bills?
So, indeed. So let's take a look at some of the alternative ways. I know you can switch, obviously, but that you can get your energy bills down. One of the articles on This Is Money website, over 15 million of us are planning to ration our energies this winter to cope with soaring bills. So what can we do to ration our energy?
Well, I think a lot of it is common sense, isn't it? You turn the thermostat down. That's what we're always told.
But there's new products coming out, like boilers that will mainly generate electricity. Looking at like insulation, and then I guess renewable energy like solar panels, which will.
Well, let's turn our attention then. Why not to renewable energy and solar panels? So, could solar panels earn you £650 profit a year? This is another article on your website, and in the vein of true journalism, your investigative financial journalist has gone out and spent £6,250 installing solar panels to find out if it will be worth it. He believes he could receive a 7% return tax free, which isn't bad if that comes out to be the case. What are the benefits of having solar panels?
I think you've summed it up there. For a lot of people, it will be a return on their investment that's actually really, really attractive.
But is that a realistic return that you can get? Over how long are we talking about here?
I mean, you're talking a long time frame, probably 10 or 20 years. Mm. But what the venerable Tony Hazel set out to report was to really look at the numbers here. People around the country this won't be news to them. It's been a heavily marketed solar panels and the potential returns that can be made. Now, the returns come because the energy that you generate, you can use for free. Mm-hmm. You can also sell energy back to the grid and to your energy supplier effectively and earn what's called an export tariff. And so half of the energy you produce, you'll get paid for. And what's more, and the thing that really makes it attractive, is that the government is incentivizing people to put panels on their roofs with a feed-in tariff. And that means that you can make sort of hundreds of pounds back each year from having these solar panels. But of course, you have to pay for it in the first place, which will be several thousand pounds.
Mark?
And then I guess the other risks are you're putting these big panels on your roof for a start, and you need to be sure that you're going to be therefore staying in your house for at least 6 or 7 years to get to that break-even stage. Otherwise, you've just paid for someone else's solar panels.
And does it devalue your house, potentially? Because they can be quite ugly.
Normally, there isn't a problem in getting permission. And what Tony found, I think, was you'll see all sorts of claims being made about the benefits and even the technology can differ, and you'll have more expensive but potentially better solar panels than others. And it's important to do that sort of research yourself to understand what the claims are being made. The risk, I suppose, is that a lot of the returns here are based on a government promise. And what's that worth? Because things can change. And at the moment, we have environmental targets that the government's trying to meet, and that's why they're incentivising people. Stranger things have happened than that changing. So people need to be aware of that.
Because they have cut that feed-in tariff in the past. It used to be...
Well, that's right. Yeah, the incentives have got less generous. Although the operators in the industry seem to say that it's a more realistic and sustainable level now, but the truth is you don't know for sure what's going to happen. And in Tony's experience, he found that really this is going to be suitable for people that are very settled in their home, that have no intention of moving, and also there are factors to do with your particular house. In what direction does the roof face? Are you going to get enough hours of sunlight? Actually, most places in the UK you are, but it's better to be down south, for example, and the southwest in particular. So you have to take all those things into consideration, because they are going to affect the benefit, the financial benefit that you get in the end.
You said it's obviously down south, probably a little bit more sunlight. Is that where most people are taking this on?
Well, funnily enough, the southwest, absolutely. Lots of people down there, which I'm sure is to do with the weather. It might be to do with lots of retired people. They have a higher proportion of retired people who might be looking to do this because they have that pot of money to invest in that home, and they don't want to move. The other place, though, contradictorily, is Scotland, where there's less sunlight, but energy bills are higher, so there's a greater incentive for people to cut them. And I should say, it's not just to do with sort of hot sunny days; it's to do the hours of daylight. So it seems that really anywhere in the UK this is viable.
Should we fully believe what renewable energy companies are telling us and promise us?
Well, some of the savings that you'll see quoted are dependent on, for example, you using a lot less energy. And that eventually is going to come down to a person's choices that they make about how they use their energy in their home. They also might take in assumptions about inflation, because the tariffs and incentives are linked to inflation. And it was Tony's experience that these assumptions varied wildly. There's no sort of standard or constant that's used. So it's worth being slightly sceptical about them. But, I mean, Tony made it work even with conservative assumptions. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely something in this.
If you do want to go about installing them, where on earth do you begin? Do you go down to your local B&Q?
Well, there's lots of companies offering these panels.
Energy Saving Trust
nodding his head there.
There's lots of suppliers, and you need to make sure they're part of certified schemes. The Energy Saving Trust is a good place to go, which will tell you kind of a type of provider to look out for. But another way, like, these are quite, it's kind of still quite niche for residential properties, but in terms of in the commercial space, there's a lot of businesses putting solar panels on their roof, because it can help reduce their bills as well. And also, if you don't fancy putting it on your roof, you could even just put money into a fund that invests in solar funds. There's several investment trusts that offer decent yields and returns at around 6%, which also is a lot more than you get on a savings rate.
It does, which we were talking about earlier. Those voices that you're hearing, investigative reporter Mark Shoffman, product research bod, as we like to call him, and Ed Monk, the personal finance editor from This Is Money website.
Sharing ideas about money on London Digital and online. This is Share Radio.
No laughing in the studios. This is a serious matter, gentlemen.
Mark should tell me to shut up when he wants to talk. Sorry.
That's fine. I'm used to being polite at home. I don't get a word in there either.
Oh, dear. Well, let's turn all of our attentions then away from telling each other to shut up, because we want each other to talk, and we certainly want each other to talk about whiplash claims. Now, this is on your website story you published today. It's a reader about getting a gentle bump that they assume would trigger no claim eventually led to a £9,000 bill. Tell us all about this.
Well, this is to do with the system for people claiming personal injury. It's not news to anybody that's people are encouraged to claim all the time about claiming for injuries to them, and whiplash in car insurance claims is a real issue. We covered a story which I think really demonstrated how things can get out of control. This was a very gentle bump at a set of red lights where a young driver really nudged the car in front, a crash that was estimated to be at walking speed, 3 or 4 miles an hour. And there was a PCSO, community support officer there with a statement to back this up. And yet the people in the car claimed for, two people in the car claimed for whiplash, triggering thousands of pounds to them as compensation, but also thousands of pounds in repair fees, replacement car hire fees, and solicitors' fees. And people probably won't be too surprised to hear that solicitors' fees made up practically half of the cost. And it really lays out how difficult it is to challenge a whiplash diagnosis in this sort of insurance claim.
That's incredibly worrying for anyone who's been involved in a bump, that you bumped the wrong car. And how do you investigate that? Do I assume you take photos of the damage done? Because if it was a walking speed crash, did they really need to? I don't know. I don't know this particular case.
Well, it's very difficult, because you can take photos, and I think that's probably sensible advice. Certainly to do with damage. And this case seems extreme, because it was a very, very slow speed crash, but yet there was £1,000 of repairs that apparently needed to be made, including hiring a car as a replacement, where it's very, very unclear whether or not that was needed. In terms of the whiplash claims, it really is difficult, because whiplash as an injury can happen at low speeds. It's to do with sort of rapid movement in the neck, and it's to tendons and muscles being overstretched. The problem with it is it might not be apparent at first that you have it. So it's all very well saying, well, he was absolutely fine and he walked away and he was all right, but it might come on hours or days later. And what the real issue in terms of an insurance claim is that a person that is diagnosed with whiplash based really on what they say and what they say they feel. Now, a doctor has very little else to go on. Mm. And it's, if the person says the right thing, they're going to get diagnosed with it. And of course, let's face it, and there'll be lots of genuine whiplash claims, of course.
Yes, of course.
So it's just very difficult to reject it. And in this case, the car insurer who faced having to pay this bill simply said, and we saw their correspondence to say, that we might doubt it, but the truth is it's very difficult to do anything about it when we've got a doctor telling us that this is a whiplash diagnosis.
If there is someone making a claim against you for whiplash, what can you do about it? What's your first steps?
Well, talk to your insurer. Talk to them to ensure that what has been, what can be questioned to do with the claim has been. Potentially, if an insurer does suspect fraud, they can ask for their own medical opinion. And it really, in order to overturn diagnosis, they're going to have to get a more authoritative medical opinion. And that costs money.
I mean, insurers
are going to be reluctant to do that.
How much are we looking at? Do you know?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, the figures in this case, the insurer said to their customer, look, if we fight this claim and we're unsuccessful, because of all the costs, not just medical costs, but legal costs, it could be £25,000 just to fight unsuccessfully a claim. And so naturally they're reluctant to do that. And that's the problem that is in the system at the moment. There is work being done to potentially ease this problem, and insurers are getting together to try and come up with disincentives for this, because clearly it's driving up insurance premiums for all of us, no matter whether we're involved in accidents and claims or not. It makes insurance claims more expensive.
What about no claims bonuses?
Well, obviously, if you've had someone claim against you for something like whiplash and it all goes through, you're going to possibly lose out. But then that's another benefit of looking into the product you're buying, because a lot of times you can protect your no claims. which gives you that support if mm-hmm. you do have an incident. And also you can look at things like legal expenses cover as well and hopefully get support in that way.
Car insurance has been getting cheaper. It's really spiralled in price in recent years, particularly for young drivers who can face paying thousands of pounds, frankly, you know, and paying an insurance premium way in excess of the value of their car. That has been falling, but it's a real problem getting younger people insured.
OK, let's move then finally to, should we talk about house prices? Are they finally changing direction? More evidence that the house market is cooling, that was according to the Council of Mortgage Lenders on Tuesday. Make some sense of it all. Is it a gradual fall, a crash, or just a blip before it all starts rising again?
Well, everyone's hopeful, I think, that it's a gradual fall. Frankly, there'll be lots of people hoping that prices rise again and quickly. But I think there was evidence that prices in certain areas were becoming unaffordable. And we may be seeing the effects of some sort of regulatory changes that have happened. It's become harder or certainly a longer, more arduous process to get a mortgage, for example. That happened this year. And there's a feeling that as those changes take effect, demand has fallen away because there's fewer people that are able to get a mortgage and for as much money. What's interesting is now that the more of the indices that we look at are changing direction, and it's places like London actually where you're seeing prices begin to change and change direction. It's going to be very interesting in the coming months to see what happens with prices.
Yesterday, the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors said the dip in activity in UK housing market and slowing property prices will only be temporary.
That's right. And
which is presumably worrying if you're looking, especially here in London, to buy.
Well, that's right. I mean, forecasts need to be taken with a pinch of salt. It's difficult to know for sure. I suppose what's fair to say, you're not suddenly going to... the demand for a home in this country is not going to go away. And we've spoken about interest rates. That any rise in interest rates keeps getting pushed back, and that only helps borrowers and demand.
Mark, final word from you?
Because we have seen a lot of this data, remember, is backward looking, particularly over the summer when there was a lull in mortgage products. And in recent weeks, mortgage rates have come back down to record lows. Like, you can get a 2-year fixed rate now for about 1.44%. So if you can find an affordable property and put together a big enough deposit, you could still get decent deals.
Mark Schaffman, Product Research Bod. Ed Monk, Personal Finance Editor from This Is Money, the award-winning financial website, Money Section of the Mail Online. Thank you both very much for joining me here in the Share Radio studios. I'm Georgie Frost. You're listening to Consuming Issues, making the pound in your pocket go a little bit further.